if you're watching a test match and a momentum is, let's say, all with England at one point and then Australia gets a wicket, it's a shift in momentum. You can see the energy pickup of the bowlers and the players because they've noticed that they understand they've broken a pattern. So they've got momentum back on their side, so they go harder.
This is Property Invest Story, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyron Shum, and in this episode on Property Invest Story, we're chatting with property developer Brendan Ansell. He will share his globe-trotting story from his childhood in South Africa to playing cricket in the UK to beginning work in finance and ultimately property. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinveststory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free.
My name is Brendan Ansell. I'm the Managing Director of Velocity Property Group, which is a listed property development company. In a quick snapshot, I've got an interesting story. I arrived in Australia 20 years ago with $50 and a one-way ticket. And have spent the last 20 years going from working in fish and chip shops to now the managing director of a listed property company.
It's clear Ansell has come a long way. He's had a long-term fascination and dream of becoming a property developer.
I've always loved property. We did struggle financially in South Africa. We weren't, we're lower middle class. So life was generally financially very much a struggle for us. But my mother was a part-time interior decorator. And so I used to go with her to appointments. And I used to see how the other side lived in, you know, very wealthy mansions. So I've always been fascinated by property and aesthetically beautiful property. So at Velocity Property Group, we focus on luxury, high-end projects. You know, we don't do investment-type properties and we don't do lower price point properties. Most of our stuff's $1 million and up. So, yeah, I've always loved aesthetically pleasing properties and luxurious properties and now we create them.
So what does a day in his life look like?
No day is even remotely the same as the next. It's, I tend to be quite fluid now. Obviously, we have staff who are very specifically skilled in all their best distinct roles. So I no longer have to be the everything to everybody. I'm trying to consciously create my day in a specific order. I divide my activities into three main lines of work. One is activities that create future opportunities and income. The second is activities that create income today or don't lose money today. So obviously problem solving. And then the third is anything admin related or getting back to people. So I prioritize my day in that order.
Ansell grew up in South Africa at a time when the country was going through a very volatile period.
I was at school during the changeover to democracy, which was an exciting time and a great time for the country, but also very volatile, lots of violence, lots of sudden changes. So we went from a very strict militaristic style society to a completely open and free overnight. So as a 16, 17-year-old, you can imagine the type of trouble you'd get up to once you suddenly got free rein in life. So, we had some challenging few years with pretty much very little structure, you could say.
The family's decision to move overseas was partially because of the violent uprisings taking place in their hometown.
No, we actually tried Canada first. So, but got rejected, thankfully, because I'm not sure how it'd be going now in minus 30 degrees. But Australia is a very similar culture to South Africa in a lot of respects. You know, very similar weather, very similar sporting type culture. So I'm thankful we got to come here because, you know, it's far easier to assimilate quicker and build contacts and friends and stuff like that. So, you know, you don't have different language barriers and other challenges. So specifically what triggered us to come, dire financial circumstances and some very close calls from a violence point of view. I was 18 when my parents came first and got the required visas and that, and then became shortly after.
He then settled onto the sporting culture in Australia for several years before making another important life decision.
I was also a reasonably good cricketer, so I played representative cricket in South Africa. So I had to make a choice whether to stay and have a go for the professional teams. But obviously the risk was high if you didn't make it. So I came to Australia specifically to make sure I could get the passport and visa stamp first before making any decisions. And then I actually ended up only staying for about 18 months, 2 years, and I took off to the UK on a cricketing contract over there. And then for the next 5 years, pretty much split my time between the UK and New Zealand. I didn't have to work too much. I got paid to play, but can't be a good thing. You know, I had a great time from pretty much 19 years old to 25. I pretty much got paid to travel the world. Didn't get a lot of money, it wasn't as professional back then in the late 90s as it is now. So we had a lot of parties and enjoyed ourselves as well.
Before moving back to Australia in 2002, at about 25 years old, his time in the UK opened up new doors for Ansell within the corporate world.
A very senior manager high up in HSBC in investment banking gave me a job in London for 2 years after I finished cricket. So that was a great segue out of cricket into a more professional environment. So I found in that time in London, people didn't work very hard. So it was a great opportunity for me to learn, you know, the game of investment banking as quickly as I could. And so I immersed myself in it and got my knowledge and skill set up in banking and investment models. And I seemed to hit a wave then too in my mid-20s where I immersed myself in personal development as well. So I pretty much spent every waking moment learning everything I could from personal development to investing to property, and quickly found that property was sort of my original passion and what I came back to. Having worked in investment banking, the stock market made no sense to me and seemed to lack any form of real intrinsic value. So and obviously seeing people and clients lose the shirt off their back pretty quickly was interesting to see. So, property was always my passion. So I reverted back to that. And I started buying property in Brisbane while I was working in London. I used that income to buy property back here. And thankfully that was, around about 2000, 2001 and 2002. So I bought properties generally in that Logan area quite cheaply, and then the market went absolutely berserk in 03, 04, and I thought I was a property genius. Meanwhile, all I did was buy some cheap properties and they went up in value. There was no skill set in it.
The choice to move back to Australia was spurred by circumstances surrounding a terrifying world event.
I came back in 2002, shortly after September 11th. I was on the trading floor in London when we actually saw on TV the planes going into the buildings, and half the stockbrokers on our floor, their phones cut out. They were actually on the phone to some of the trading floors in the tower, so that was a bit of a shock. And the US embassy was next door to us, so I didn't really want to hang around too too long. So I think I quit the next month and spent 3 or 4 months traveling around Europe before coming back in 2002.
Preferring Queensland to New South Wales, Ansell found it challenging to further pursue his career in banking. So he began work in a different field.
I tried to get back into banking here. I was a bit surprised that my experience in London didn't seem to count for me. But obviously, I wanted to come back to Brisbane as opposed to Sydney. Brisbane's a very similar climate and lifestyle to Durban, where I'm from. So I've always preferred Brisbane over Sydney. And coming back to Brisbane, there was essentially no banking here at that time. And obviously, the early 2000s was a challenging time as well. There's very little work available or on the go. And then coming into 2003-04, the property market came off as well. So it was a challenging time to be in Brisbane and get ahead. So I decided to branch out and get into finance, as in, mortgage broking and financing for other developers. So I literally spent the next probably till 2007, 2008. I still have a share in the original finance business, which is being managed by someone else now. But up until about 5 years ago, I pretty much spent 8-9 years immersing myself in that and running my own business. And that was excellent because it was a great way to earn cash flow plus do your own small projects on the side and also learn lessons from our clients, so I didn't have to go through those hard times myself.
Creating high-end luxury properties was something that always resonated throughout Ansell's journey, even in his early days.
Even when I was doing the finance, I was still doing quality projects. I just never had that ability to try and, purchase a block of land and build a cheap house. I always wanted to try and spec it up or go for a higher price point. So, even going back to 2009, 2010, I was doing splitters and Hawthorne, Bulimba, those sorts of areas at $1 million+ then. So it wasn't, so we started that fairly early. But also my research told me that, suburbs in Brisbane like Bulimba, Auckland Flower, the inner city boutique, low density suburbs maintain their values exceptionally well. They're desirable lifestyle areas. So, I didn't see it as great risk to go into that price point. I saw it as less risky than some of the cheaper suburbs that were more susceptible to interest rate rises and other factors and supply. Obviously, constrained land supply in the inner cities of Australia. So
what did he do with his properties in Logan? In the end, he made the decision that felt right for this situation.
I just kept trading up. And interesting, I've had a very similar discussion this week with another chap I'm mentoring at the moment who is probably, you could almost identically put him in my spot back then in around 2002, 2003. And I've had this discussion this week already with someone else where he's actively trying to become full-time in property but also hold on to properties along the way. And unless you have a consistent cash flow, it's very, very difficult to do that.
Yeah.
And you hit the wall where no banks will lend you any money. So, no, I sold and kept trading up.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve further into Ansell's journey, where we talk about how he changed his life through changing his way of thinking.
I believe there are some random aspects to life, but we have a great element of control over it. And you're exactly where you are based on your personal development and your internal belief system. So,
how he learned a valuable lesson from his worst property development moment.
It's understanding your own personal risk profile. What are you prepared to accept?
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, Hey, podcast listeners, are you enjoying listening to these stories and want more? Then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email. Just one of the many benefits of being part of this community. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, their strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. Being brought up around parents who weren't involved in property, Ansel started at the bottom and worked his way up. He believes it all came down to taking control of his life and making a change.
They're not from that sort of line of thinking. They're in their 70s now and they still work quite hard, and they're in the sort of auto electrical type businesses. So no, they've never been investors. None of my family is from that, from that side. So no, I'm completely 100% self-made. It's pretty hard to, obviously, as you can imagine, put 20 years of life experience into a short conference like this. But if I had to summarise how that happens, I could probably only say that your mindset and your personal development dictates where you are in life. I personally don't believe it's that random. I believe there are some random aspects to life, but we have a great element of control over it. And you're exactly where you are based on your personal development and your internal belief system. So I didn't want that life. I wanted a better life. So I learned what needed to be learned. You have to become the person first. You know, history will show that people that suddenly win money, like in the lotto or something, generally, in most cases, lose it and end up in a worse position than before, because their skill set and their mindset haven't kept pace with their wealth. So, you know, if somebody wants to get out of that position, and obviously I've always been a forward-thinking and forward-moving person. I can't stand sitting still. I can't stand just going to the same mundane 9-to-5 job every day and say, this is my lot in life. I wasn't built that way. So I wasn't going to accept that. I was going to do whatever it took to get out of those situations.
In terms of his worst investing moments, Ansel's strong-willed state of mind allows him to overcome his challenges and not dwell on them too freely.
I would call myself a very strong, resilient person. I tend not to be down too long. I don't allow myself to stay in that frame of mind for too long. So yeah, I have challenges every day. I have them now. Your challenges never go away. They just change. So, you know, if anyone's expecting that they'll become successful and life will be suddenly easy and you have no issues in life, I'm sorry, that's not realistic. Some of my biggest challenges are now, not necessarily back in the past, you know, because we have a far greater responsibility now. I do it for the love of the game, not for love of the game first and personal wealth second. So when I was just on my own as a developer running my own company, and making money or losing money, that was fine because it was always the next deal to go into. So it created a process that gave me my energy. Now I've got a far greater responsibility of looking after thousands of shareholders' hard-earned capital. So it's a different type of challenge. But if I go back to deals, thankfully I've only ever lost on one deal, and that was about $8,000. So my grounding in finance gave me the knowledge first before I went full-time into property. So I increased my knowledge base first before committing too heavily.
As it turns out, the deal he lost could have been a lot worse if he had continued with it, making the choice to cut his losses when it didn't work out.
I personally believe the ones you let go are more important than your wins. So even stock market traders will tell you that. You minimise your losses and you ride your wins. So when you have a property or a site and, you know, you can see that the market's coming off, rather than put your head in the sand and go, well, I'm just going to go and build this anyway and hope I can sell it at the end. You know, I bought this site. I got a DA for 7 apartments. I was sitting there looking at it and going, well, I can't build it. I can't build it. I'm not going to be able to sell this. The market's coming off. I've got my timing all wrong here. So, yeah, you got two choices. You push ahead and hope that it comes out all right. Well, I went, oh, there's an offer on the table. It's a small loss, and $8,000 is a small loss in the project if you're going to take a loss. I'll take the sale and move on. But the key there for me was I kind of went outside of my usual formula. Instead of sticking to premium high-end areas, you know, high-end property for owner-occupiers, I went out to the outer suburbs and tried to expand the number of properties I was doing, you know, going from two or three at a time to six and seven, because I wanted to get to that next stage. I wanted to increase the size of my project, but went out to an outlying area where, you know, and the market's more volatile. It was probably one of the best decisions I ever made. I could have lost $1 million and, you know, gone bankrupt or gone backwards and or eroded years of hard work. But it's very, very difficult for people to admit they made a mistake. It's very hard to actually put your hand up and go, I made a mess of this. I made a bad choice here. I've just got to suck up the loss and move on. And it doesn't matter if that's $8,000 or $100,000. If you can suppress your ego long enough to make calm, rational decisions for the long term, medium and long term thinking is exceptionally important in property. Because if you're constantly focusing on the medium and long term, what you're trying to build, you don't mind taking that $8,000 loss. It's understanding your own personal risk profile. What are you prepared to accept? You know, if you're not prepared to accept any losses, when you get close to loss, you have to cut and run. If you're a person that has a higher risk profile, where you're happy to wait it out and see if the market recovers, you know, may go up, may go down. So as I've become more successful, my risk profile has actually dropped.
When considering the aha moments where everything fell into place for Ansell, his top three were centered on the philosophy of momentum.
I've always really understood momentum. Momentum is, and that probably comes from a sporting background, playing cricket and going through long periods of time, you really get, and go and sit and watch a test match, and you'll see momentum change. And if you're watching a test match and a momentum is, let's say, all with England at one point, and then Australia gets a wicket, it's a shift in momentum. You can see the energy pickup of the bowlers and the players because they've noticed that they understand they've broken a pattern. So they've got momentum back on their side, so they go harder. The bowler doesn't relax and go, I got a wicket, I look good on the scoreboard, I'm just going to chill out for the next few overs and bowl medium pace. They go harder. So they understand momentum. So when you get an opportunity or you meet a person or something that's really good value for you, don't go on holiday for a week. You know, go harder. You can go holiday later.
The first important moment for him was when the GFC hit and he had to make a choice between doing the right thing or turning a blind eye.
During the GFC, you know, everybody had severe problems. I had a lot of property. Interest rates went through the roof. I was really getting squeezed. Cash flow was dropping. Expenses were going through the roof. And I had a situation where I had a small project in Blimber, and I got right to the stage of about to start construction, and I just went, I can't do it. Everything's going bad in business and property. I can't build these. I've got to pull back. So obviously going to that builder, who's very, very disappointed, I asked them, I think I had about $15,000 in cash left. I asked them what expenses that they had incurred to date. So I had a choice then. I could just walk away, save my 15 grand, look after myself. And I thought, there's something in this. There's a pivotal moment here that is something relevant to me. And if I do this, I'm going to be confident I'm going to be rewarded for this. I paid him $12,500 to make sure that they incurred no loss. And I went right down to my last $2,500, which is a tough thing to do. I just had a strong intuitive feeling that I needed to do that. That action took me to another level. You could shift your thinking from self-preservation to a more abundant, big picture thinking. So it was a pivotal moment. That builder has completely missed the lesson completely. They just took the money and ran. That's all right. So it's not my job to, they didn't understand how unique that choice was and how big it was, because that people would have been stiffing them left, right and centre.
Another pivotal moment came when he met an influential person who would have a positive impact on the evolution of his mindset.
Second is meeting one of my current mentors, who's close to being a billionaire at the moment, who is also a migrant, very relevant. I wanted to choose mentors that were relevant to my situation, and migrants are very, very successful in Australia for obvious reasons. So he's a migrant, and he was essentially broke at late 40s, 50 years old, and started again from scratch, and has built a billion-dollar empire. So inside 20 years. So I listened to him talk at an event, and I knew there were probably 1,000 people there, and I thought, I think everyone's going to pepper him after this. I'd just be yet another number of people ringing him, asking him if they can catch up. So I thought, I need to think differently. So I actually rang his office and I said to his secretary, I'm making a $1,000 donation to his charity now. I would like to meet him for an hour, but there is no obligation. I'll make the donation anyway. And that single event made me stand out above all the people ringing him, just asking him for something. And he actually called me in for a meeting. And then it's proceeded to keep in touch, and I've spent a bit of time with them. I've played golf with them, and the time I've spent with them has completely raised my ceiling on what's possible. When I first met them, I was doing little six packs, seven packs of units, and then through a little bit of interaction, I've gone, he has created a billion-dollar empire in 20 years. There's no skill set difference between him and I. There's only a mindset difference. So what I took from that is I raised my ceiling massively, and I'm not going to put a ceiling on. I want to see how far we can go with this. Can we become the biggest property company in Australia? Now we decide.
The third aha moment for Ansell fell into place at a tipping point where things shifted as a consequence of a significant decision he made.
And then the third event was I wanted to think how I could expand much bigger and faster, and the only way is access to larger amounts of capital and bringing on powerful joint venture partners. So I very fortunately happened to meet a gentleman from Singapore who was out on holiday. He got introduced by a mutual friend and just happened to be that pivotal moment in time where, and I actually had a choice because I was walking down Oxford Street with my son, like going for a beer, and she rang me and said, this gentleman's out from Singapore. We're actually down the street in Bulimba. Do you want to meet up? So you got a choice. You can go, no, I'm going to go have a beer with my mates, or I can go meet a business contact. So I asked somebody to look after my son, and I went and met him. So if I didn't go to that meeting, it would have been a radically different outcome. So I met him, and their group from Singapore came out to view a project with us, and about 2 months later they had committed to a $20 million project, which up until that point, my largest project was probably 7 or 8 million. So I went to another level straight away. And that has triggered a series of events of access to large amounts of capital through Singapore and then to become a listed company. So there's three very key pivotal moments there. But intuitively, I could recognize them, the importance of them at the time, and didn't commit to doing it. I didn't go and play golf or do something else and get to that later. I'll place them as high priority.
So, inspired by Ansell's story and his pivotal aha moments, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Invest Story. We'll talk about his strategy for property investing.
Before you even get to that, it helps you get to your journey faster by having as much clarity as you can on what you're trying to do.
The success habits that have contributed to his success.
I would say I'm a more of an intuitive person, and I feel in the moment in time of what actions and courses to take.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email, you can text me your email address to 0499881040 to subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to get your free case studies. Thanks for listening.